Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello and welcome to episode 89 of the Indigenous Vision podcast. We are here for a very special edition of the podcast this week as we roll into MMIW, a week of action leading up into May 5th, which we have spoken about earlier as being the National Day of Awareness for MMIWGs. I am Melissa Spence. I am coming to you from Nevada, Southern Paiute land. And of course, I have our executive director, Suta Collinglast, and our very special guest, Emily. Hello, Suta. How are you? And hello, Emily.
Chef Patchway, good afternoon. My name is Emily Washings. I'm an enrolled Yakima tribal member, and I also have Cree and Skokomish lineage. I am a founder of a website I call Native Friends, where I study history and culture, and I also pursue different questions regarding the MMIW, MMIP crisis.
And I think Emily and I'm not sure where we met. I think we were friends on Facebook through just different shared interests. And then in, I guess, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I made a missing murdered Indigenous women and girls map for Native Friends. It was really surprising to see that you had one block just off of the interstate in Yakima where, was it 8 or 9 girls? I can't remember now. Just in the one block vicinity had gone missing over a 30-year period? I should have refreshed my memory a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. And then most of them were, a lot of them are look like they are being driven out into the mountains and are being hurt or experiencing violence going missing back there. How have things changed since then?
I mean, there's definitely high numbers still of missing and murdered Indigenous people at Yakima. What I guess is expanded is the Washington State Patrol now does a monthly list of the missing Indigenous, the known and reported MMIP in the state, and Yakima County ends up having the highest MMIP numbers. So for a very rural area to have very high, the highest numbers in the state, it's kind of alarming. Like, why are our numbers higher than Seattle or other places? And of course, there's other things that go into that or could go into that, such as racial misclassification in urban areas, but we still see such a alarming number. And it's something that your mapping project and others, when they add those kind of tools, really help give visual examples.
And we've shared some of our self-defense kits with Native Friends. And so, Emily, they are a little hard to, like, they're, I haven't put all of mine together yet because each keychain has about 8 or 9 different things on there. And so it takes a few minutes to sit down and put them together. And, you know, I go back and forth and on these self-defense kits because I'm really worried about the violence we meet as women and how these tools with no training can be used against us in a lot of ways and, you know, our organizational liability. But there's, you know, there are other organizations giving out pepper sprays and bear mace, or not bear maces. I keep saying bear. I'm also a mountaineer person. So yeah, I gotta keep sprays for both bears and men or wild people. But like you, there are other organizations who do this for women to protect themselves. But I think as women, this is where our self-defense comes in as well, where we sponsor that. And it's important to know how our bodies react in crisis. And Emily, I follow you and your fitness journey. And I think it's really cool that, I mean, well, first of all, I think you've lost like 30 pounds over this last year or two, which is really amazing, and gained lots of muscle, which is inspiring. And it's all really inspiring, and that fitness level that you have and that dedication to yourself, I think is really important for other Native women to do as well, because we are only effective as we put training into our body, right? And I believe in training, and I go off of a study from Indiana's state where they give self-defense to girls in high school, and that reduces their experience with sexual violence or just violence in general by 50%. And I keep thinking and saying to myself, like, what if we had a world where Indigenous women experienced 50% less violence than we do have right now? So,
yeah, it's definitely important. And the whole aspect of the MMIW, MMIP crisis in light of like exercise and fitness is something that is definitely intertwines. I think I go on runs and walks alone, but I'm always, you know, putting in different safety protocols, having different tools handy. I think as somebody that, you know, has had a stalker on the Yakima reservation, it's something that you can impede your progress when you're just wanting to go for like a quick 10-minute, 15-minute walk, when you've dealt with something and an issue that's very intense, when you're noticing that you have triggers and you want, when your body wants movement and your body wants nature, but you're scared about being alone. You know, these factors definitely play in. And there was just a point where I just decided, like, it's happening. It's going to happen. I need this. I will put in different, you know, calls. And, you know, every time I, you know, let somebody know where I'm going. And I think the aspect of having kits where you're putting, there's such power in that. First of all, there's such power in being able to be afraid and then channel that into an action and channel that into a like national action where you, you know, sent these kits up and I'm going to distribute them to different Yakima women or even men that might feel unsafe or might need an aspect of tools, like the aspect of like feeling afraid, but then being able to have a tool in your hand to address that. That's so powerful to have, where you're not just like just reading the statistics or just looking at these things and feeling like these waves of being impacted or traumatized by it.
It's a pretty important thing to have with you when you're out there. I don't think you should ever, because I've done things to like not wear headphones in certain areas. Sometimes I'll wear big shades so that people don't know where I'm looking to. Or like if I'm in a new place, I kind of like want to look like I belong, and you don't want to look like you're out of place and you don't know where you are, or kind of like that situational awareness, right? You pretend to be comfortable and know where you're going so that nobody's red flags are triggered that you don't know where you're going, or maybe somebody doesn't know where you are. And there's all kinds of safety aspects like that. But if you are or have been a runner or a trail runner or a jogger, I think for like the last 10 years, it's been pretty common to see a woman running with a pepper spray in her hand. And just through the city even, so let alone on mountain trails or river trails. So yeah, we're giving those out and they're going to go to, we don't have very many because they're kind of expensive, but they're fun things too, just in case you ever need them. I'm a woman of tools. I like to be prepared even if I don't need it. So there's like the window breaker on there, the pepper spray, the Coubaton, I think is how you say it. And that's just to like, if you're weak, I would call myself like weak fisted, like I would hurt my hand if I hit something. So the Coubaton is like, you put it in your hand if you have to do a swing. And then and if you go to self-defense, they teach you all kinds of protective movements. And I went to judo self-defense and they kind of go straight for the throat in judo. So like they teach you how to rip people's throats out and how to make them lose their wind. And so, yeah, that's scary if my training kicks in, and it has before, and it really does. It takes 6 weeks of training to mentally and physically prepare your body for an emergency. And so that 6 weeks of training ensures that your muscle memory is in place so that when you hit that fight or flight, that cortisol starts rushing in your system. It's almost like your automatic pilot comes on. Whatever you've trained your body to do, it will do in that. I mean, I believe it. It's done it for me a couple of times. And so I'm a big proponent of self-defense training, no matter what kind it is. Melissa took boxing, you know, knowing how to throw a good punch. I don't know how to do that, but I can judo kick your butt a few feet away. But yeah, so we have the self-defense sponsorships that's available for women across the continent in the US and Canada, because our nations are separated by these colonial borders. That's up to 150. And we want people to be in at least 6 weeks of training. And every single gym I've called across the country is really for this and really supportive. And they already, like, they already have, you know, 2-week free membership type programs going on. But for this, oftentimes they say, we'll train them for 2 weeks free. You cover 1 month membership. And that's a really easy. And oftentimes that gym membership is only $49 a month. And so I've budgeted out like $150 a woman or person, because this is LGBTQ friendly. LGBTQ. Okay. I think I'm adding letters in there, but
yeah.
Melissa took boxing, and I don't know, what would you be interested in? We just, honestly, we haven't had a big response to the self-defense sponsorships, but we also haven't had a lot of time to promote it.
I primarily did at home, like workouts, but one of the ones that I did was with Halle Berry. Why am I blanking on her name? The actress, Halle Berry's trainer. Peter, who also does a lot of like martial arts, and he does a lot of different movie scenes where he trains martial artists. And so when I was going through some of those, it was really interesting because he was saying, this isn't actually something that you would use in real life, but this is the move that you would see frequently in movies because it's a very exaggerated sense. But for me, I would often be working out on the lawn. So I'd probably look like a little bit of a crazy person doing all these stunt double moves. But I mean, you know, when you were kind of in the house with five people continuously for so long, you needed to be like a little bit out on the lawn. And so for me, that really like helped. And I feel like that really strengthened a lot of my, a lot of the things. And then I love the conversational feel and vibe of somebody teaching. I was somebody that was fortunate enough that my parents put all of their five children into self-defense training very young. My siblings would often come up and like pretend to kidnap me, which sounds so horrible when I say, like, when you finally get to the point where you vocalize some of the things that you've taught or you've done, like it horrifies some non-natives when they're like, what did you, why would your sibling pretend to kidnap you? That's 10, 9, 6 years older than you. And it's like, because they're teaching us how to survive. And that's just that's a normal part of how I was raised. I didn't realize that other people weren't like necessarily going through this when I was a younger age, but so yeah, I'm definitely somebody that learned how to throw a punch very early in a very teaching center thing. And I do consider being able to have that muscle memory like very important, because I've been in scenarios where you've been trapped with somebody right there, and you do, you know, there's a moment where you can freeze up, and there's a moment where you're like, your mental capacity hasn't caught up to like what you need to physically do all the time. There's that moment. And I think any woman or person that has been there, we can remember and recall that and relives that again and again. Like, why did I pause? And I knew this was going on. And unfortunately, in some of these instances, it's somebody that you know in the community sometimes, and in your brain, it's like, what is going on? Why, what would create the scenario in which this person reacted this way, or is choosing, waking up and choosing violence, I guess is the phrase people use. But being prepared is a big part of that. And I am so happy to hear about the self-defense classes and the partnership that goes on. I did just recently join a gym last week, and we haven't been, so I'm the classic example of the person that hasn't been to the gym yet but joined. And I'm not sure if they offer kickboxing. I'll have to like look back into with whether they do self-defense or kickboxing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a couple of different kinds. I think it's important to just get in there or get out to a gym and see what's offered, because we've run across all different kinds of trainers, a lot of military self-defense, like hand-to-hand combat. People have volunteered to lead our self-defense classes, a lot of ex-cops or currently serving officers have offered to teach us what they know. And usually they have some kind of belt as well. And for a long time, we worked with Kylie Hunts in the Winter, a Lakota girl who is over at Harvard now, and she has a black belt in a martial arts. And so I learned judo self-defense, and sometimes they're explicit and they have self-defense on the title of the course. And other times you're just like, Melissa, and she just wanted to learn how to throw a good punch. And I think that's important, right? Like, because that's what you were talking about is what I went through. And I never had to fight when I was a little girl. My sisters protected me and took care of me, and their reputation like preceded me. You know how res girls are. Yeah. So nobody ever messed with me. Plus I grew up really tall and I'm like a foot taller than, you know, some of the other girls. And so no one ever, you know, tried me out, tested me out. But there was one party, and it wasn't a party. We were just, you know, kids, 18 and 19 years old, home from that first year of college. And we were playing video games and pool in a friend's house. And then another party came over to see what we were doing, and they were drunk. And yeah, it's alcohol and substance induced violence. They woke up and chose that entertainment that day would be a fight and going to pick a fight with somebody. And so the person that they wanted to fight wasn't in front of the person who was blacked out and ready to fight. And so I heard "get her," and all of a sudden I realized, and it occurred to me, like, her is me. And I was like, oh my goodness. And then like time slowed down, like super crawl space. And I stacked up, and I was like really proud of myself. I was like ankles, hips, and hands up, like ankles, hips, hands up, like that just came right to mind. And so I squared up to the point where like, I can't be pushed over, or you have to have a really good running push to knock me over. I couldn't be knocked over. And time was so slow. I still am amazed at how slow the time went, because I had time to think, like, do I throw this punch? Am I really going to rip her throat out? Like, this is going through my head, and she's running slow motion to me, and her face is very angry. And she, like, you can hear, like, you can see the growl on her face as she's running towards me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my first fight. And I was really scared. And I couldn't throw the punch to rip her throat out. I instead judo kicked her, because I didn't want her to get that close to me. Her being arm's length away from me was too close. And so my legs are really long. And so she was at the right spot, and my body and my training timed it right. I was not really at the steering wheel even though I was thinking like that. I was just kind of sitting back and just amazed at the steps that my body was taking, how slow time was moving. I had time to contemplate my posture multiple times. I had time to contemplate what hit or kick I was going to throw. And in the end, I ended up knocking the wind out of her with my kick, because it landed right on her sternum area. And then she flew back and she hit the driveway, and it knocked the wind out of her again. And that amazed the crowd, and I had time to lock the door and run upstairs and lock the other door, and then I like protected my friends that night. But it was the training. I had only had maybe 6 or 7 weeks of training at that point, and I am a scared girl who had never gotten a fight before. Nobody has ever tried me out. I thought I would crumple and freeze and just take the beating, right? And I didn't. and the training is what protected me. And so now I'm a big proponent. But yeah, so that's available to anybody who wants self-defense training. And if they're caught in situations where their body isn't doing what they want, maybe you are crumpling and maybe you are freezing. And at our self-defense classes, the trainers would often give the women time at the end, like the last 20, 30 minutes of class, to say, what moves would you like to learn, like a protective move from? And it's really sad that, you know, we had a big group of women in Phoenix. It was majority Native women, but we also had white women and Black women and Hispanic women, because of the Phoenix area. And it was really sad that a lot of the moves that women were asking for were protective moves when their husbands surprised them. And it made me really concerned and kind of angry that abuse and violence against women in general is something that's happening in our own homes, you know, and we go to community events like our upcoming MMIW events and these self-defense classes to find camaraderie and sisterhood and protection or tools and training. Whew, this gets me emotional, because all of those women have come to our trainings and asked for help, like, and had to go home.
Yeah. I hear you, Sunta. I was there. It's hard to have women have to go home to their spouses after learning these moves. Like, what do I do when they come from behind? Like, that was really hard to listen to. I don't know how to get more women into these gyms. I know that Las Vegas, where there is a huge human trafficking problem here, like it's just this weird, dark undertone energy that's throughout the whole city. They just announced this one gym. Every Wednesday, they offer self-defense classes for women because it is such a problem here in Las Vegas and Nevada. So again, I'm going to be handing out these kits at our MMIW event. And I'm going to be mentioning, hey, does anybody want to come with me on Wednesdays to go get self-defense training? Because there's an actual gym now that wants to focus in on women in Las Vegas at the self-made training facility. But yeah, it's extremely hard. And, you know, and I try not to get too fired up with this issue because every time I'm out here trying to make connections and network, it's all women who are doing the work. I'm like, where are the friggin' men when we're trying to combat this issue? Instead of being, you know, criticizing our efforts, like I've seen so much on our internet posts and social media, even with this new facility that's just opened with self-defense training, it was all guys jumping in the comments and being like, you can learn all you want, but you still might not stand a chance. I was just like, where are these dudes coming from? Like, can you at least give us a little bit of support, maybe some help with this issue, maybe tell your homies, them on the same page, you know, try and dismantle misogyny, which is the root of this problem. So I feel the anger and I get fired up as well. But at the same time, I'm focused on the work, and these kits were the thing that came to me this year. I thought, as someone who's learning to go out and be quote unquote a citizen, a mountaineer, and I'm someone who's really enjoying the land a lot more, I'm going out by myself. I thought, I need a set of tools all in one spot that if I need to stuff it in my pants and go somewhere, if I get, you know, if I disappear, at least I'll have these tools with me to maybe send a signal, to maybe help me get out of whatever I'm stuck in. I just thought it would be a cool way for anybody to use these tools and kind of make them pretty at the same time. I mean, we made them look kind of cute. We got pom-poms on there, but at the same time, it's legit self-defense tools because a lot of us are doing this work on our own.
That's really where it started from, isn't it, Emily? We just kind of like saw something our community needed and we're like, I think I can do that.
Yeah, I love thinking about things and tools that we can like give to people again. And even what you're sharing about, you know, what you hear from the community, it's something that, you know, we have to carry with us. And it's that aspect of, it's definitely emotional to carry things like that and to carry that knowledge and to be in that space or somebody shares that. And at the same time, it's, you balance that strength and vulnerability together in this work. I'm fortunate enough to have a partner that I've never had to be put in that scenario and situation, but knowing that there unfortunately are other people out there that are in unsafe environments or not with safe partners is hard to look at and to hear. I do love what Melissa shared about this aspect of just come with me on Wednesdays. I think it's just such a very specific invite. And it inspires me to think about how I can engage in conversation and opportunities in Yakima about that. Yakima actually has our own center that has a little like a workout center. And it also has like a space for like group training. And I'm just like, you know, I'm now creating this as a brainstorming session between us, but like, what if we did a self-defense and we had a very specific day and then we, you know, grew that and then I could have my own call to community members about come with me on Wednesdays, just like Melissa.
Yeah, like let's make one of the Wednesdays like the Indigenous night. Like go one Wednesday out of the month and then we all show up, do our thing, learn the moves. Like I specifically wanted to learn boxing. I'm a plus size woman. I'm someone who can't run. If I run, I'm not going to be able to run for that long. Like I know my body and I know that I got short legs. I'm not going to be able to kick. Like I'm just not going to be able to. So I wanted to learn boxing where I could throw a punch, use my weight as momentum and like get one good one in there and hopefully knock somebody out. I don't have the heart to really kill somebody, I don't think. I've even thought about that with the coups-de-batons, you know, like I've been in a couple situations here, even in Las Vegas already. And I thought, I don't want to kill this person. I have pity on them for the way that they are, but I definitely want to, you know, teach them a lesson to not do these things to women. So I'm really glad that I have the self-defense kit. And I noticed, and this is a big thing too, is when I think when I went, at least in my experience, when I went through the self-defense classes, the confidence level was through the roof. And I think that when you're walking in public or you're out there and you're confidently walking outside, you are less likely to be approached by someone because of the way that you're carrying, the energy you're exuding, you know, and the situational awareness compounded with the confidence and just the way you're moving, I think really deters people from attacking you. Like my situations are always out in public. I'm someone who doesn't drive. I live in a big city. I walk around. I have like a really distinct look to me. So I attract a lot of weirdos. So that's just what works for me. And I think it's really comes down to really knowing yourself and what you want to know and what you want to learn as far as self-defense goes. So I think going initially to one of these classes would be a great way to start that journey. Like maybe you do want to learn some like actual martial arts, or maybe you just want to throw some really good punches like me, or maybe you want to go training on firearms, take it to the next level. Who knows?
That's super awesome. And Emily, we do offer that too. Like if you are just a woman in your community and you say, hey, I have a building and I just want to get everybody there, the next step would be contacting your closest gym, or usually I just call all of them and say, how much would it cost to come out for 90 minutes and do this for us? And then they'll throw you a price, and it's usually anywhere between $45 and $125 for their time for that 90 minutes. But once they hear it's for MMIW, most times people tell me I'll do it for free. And I don't like that, because I'm like, oh, I am so over like exposure, right? I need to be paid and raise my child and send them to school too. And like, even if they say they'll work for free, I still like to give them that, you know, minimum like $50, $60 for an hour's worth of their time. We have facilitator's guide. So I've got a whole agenda planned out for 90 minutes community events, and that introduces your instructor. So reach out to your community, reach out to your officers, the police officers, ask if there's anyone who's willing to come teach the women self-defense on this day, this time. You're the facilitator. You have an agenda that you can send them. And then I always leave those last few minutes open for scenarios that the women bring from their experiences. And so it's all laid out. I'll help you pay the instructor. I'll give you the agenda, give you talking points. There's stats included on that agenda. Like, we're 10 times more likely to be met with violence. We're 2 times more likely to be raped. And, you know, just the MMIW stats. And Melissa, I like the way you added MMIWGs.
I know that sounded super gangster. Sorry. About that. I'm going to learn from Emily to say MMIW and MMIP, because trying to get the other letters in there was just too much for me.
I start sounding like the goose on a double E, double O, double G. But what's going on in Yakima? Do you have a Yakima event, or is it like a big Spokane event? Or you can be in Seattle this year?
Yakima is actually hosting their first MMIW symposium this year. So it's a 2-day event where the first day they're going to have speakers, and then the second day they're going to have a march that's led by families of MMIP. And then they're also working on an exhibit that will be in our Yakima Nation Museum. Since it's a first time event, or, you know, we're seeing things pieced together, but actually I was just talking to the family member of one of the women that's actually was seen in Washington, but her case is reported in Montana on the Crow Reservation. Their family just like registered yesterday afternoon. It's a free symposium. And that aspect in that moment that you talked about being emotional when you hear like very specific things, like it's a very real one with this. I mean, it's very personal, and you have a very front and up close seat to that. And as I was traveling to this Native Cases Institute, I'm on travel in Spokane, we passed by the city where this woman, Frida Knows His Gun, was last seen. And I was telling my husband, I was like, hey, I just wanted to talk to you about something real quick about like what I did earlier, just because I could feel the emotion, just, you know, you feel the emotion and you know you're feeling it. And we've lived with this silent MMIW, MMIP crisis for so long. You feel almost like weird about like vocalizing certain things sometimes. And I always have to kind of have a check and a balance on that. Like, hey, am I feeling something where I need to express it? Do I need to have that power of voice? Do I need to share with somebody about kind of what's internally going on? And I had just shared that this family had contacted me and they're going to go visit the site that their loved one was last seen at. And it's the first time that they're going to go there where she was last heard from, which was at a Walmart in Kennewick, Washington. And Frida was trying to get home to Montana to take her kids trick-or-treating. And she had asked her friend to wire her some money. And there was some issue with the way that her name was written the first time the friend sent it. So they were reissuing it. And just in that span of like 15 minutes where you talk to her and then she just never picked up the money. It took like maybe 15 minutes to address it, I'm guessing, or a few minutes. And she's just never been heard from again. And I thought about this family and I was thinking like about the aspect of this work and how nothing is very like, there's no very specific requests that come from families that are consistent. They're all very specific to that individual family member or to that MMIP and what they're asking. And so what this family member who was asking is, I don't even know where this Walmart's at. Like, I know it's in Kennewick somewhere. And so I was like sitting with that question. And then I am just some kind of person, much like we're talking about these kits, much like we're talking about these defense classes, where it's like, is there a next step that I can take to help them? Like, that wouldn't be like overstepping. And they're not deliberately asking because there's no like necessarily like book for how to do these kind of things. So when my family member goes missing and when I want to go visit that site, what are the steps? Like the federal government and different tribes try to create response kits, but they're never specific enough for what the family members have. And so I just thought about that. And I thought, well, I have Google. I can look up the hours of that store. I can give the very specific address if that's what they want. And so then that's what I did. And they're very appreciative of it. And I thought about how looking back at something like that, how that can come across as very simple. But when you're the family member of somebody that, you know, you're the sister of somebody that's been missing for so long, like Frida, how much trauma and triggers come up with that? A relatively simple task for some people is very difficult for others. And I think that's the power of like community and being able to help with this, especially because on those missing lists that Washington State Patrol had, Frida wasn't on there for a number of time. I don't want to say the specific time because I believe in that process, but to be constructively critical, she wasn't on that list, even though the last place she was seen was in Washington, because she was reported where the family lived, which is in Crow in Montana. So in my mind, that just never aligned, never added up. I was like, why is she not on this list? Why, if the last place she was seen was in Washington and now we have a Washington list, why isn't she on there? Why isn't her name shared on there? You know, right now, as of this moment, she's on there. She was added. They understand the importance of these jurisdictional issues that pop up and then just, you know, addressing it. So I kind of went on a long response to you on that one, but that's what's came up for me.
That's why we podcast about this, because we just sit at home or on the phone talking with each other. And Melissa's like, we need to hit record. And so we like to catch all of the little rants, but they all contribute. And Frida is really important to know that's how we fall through the cracks, is like we could be reported missing in Montana, one state, or Arizona, but then not make the list in the actual state or place that we went missing, which makes us fall off the radar in a whole bunch of different ways. So thanks for sharing her story with us, because yeah, she's kind of a woman that ties our two states together, and somewhere along our interstate that we live along, she was taken. So if you are planning on being an advocate, an ally, if you are a family member of a missing and murdered Indigenous person, definitely look up your town or your city or your state's local events. In Arizona, they have their MMIW events at the state capitol, which is very cool to go down there and see the entire state capitol turned red, which is it's just amazing to see in a state with that many people, because a Phoenix has like 6 million, 8 million people in it. And so for that many people to get awareness of what MMIW is really awesome. And the more awareness that we have, the less likely that somebody will go missing, because then you have more people looking out for that sister who may have just been roofied and looks like she's being walked off by somebody who she doesn't know. You know, it's important to know how to react as a community. Definitely locate and notify the security guards if you're in that situation, and they have cameras in all of those places. And then definitely stall. I always stall, because this is a situation I've run into a lot for some reason, is seeing the girl like roofied, and you can tell she's definitely roofied and not drunk. And so you just stall her and say, do you know this man? Who is he? Where are you going? How are you feeling? You don't look good. Just like keep her talking until security gets there. And then security knows the better questions to look, because they're actually oftentimes trained in human trafficking. And so, yeah, if you could just be the person out there stalling, because somebody must have saw Frida being talked to by somebody. Right. And if it was like an altercation, there's ways that we can stall that abduction from happening. And so situational awareness, it even works when you're not the victim. So Missoula, Montana's events, they're going to be held by ACES, NALSA, ABLE, One Person, Indigenous Graduate Student Associations, Native American Natural Resources, the University Powwow Club, and the Latin Student Association, are all coming together with members of the Missoula community to raise more awareness on this. And we would like to invite you all out. We're still looking for volunteers, and I'm pretty sure events across the country are looking for volunteers in some way to set up tables or chairs, podiums, PAs, to just be present and show that people care about this issue. And we just had Brandon pop on. Hi, Brandon. I don't know if you remember me. I work with Val. We've met each other a few times at the Arizona State Capitol. But
right.
Are you all planning the events down there this year?
Yes, our annual May 5th MMIP Awareness Day will be at the State Capitol, starting at, I believe, 3 or 3:30. We are having breakout sessions. They will be in the Senate. 3:30 to 5, and then at 5 we will be gathering for the annual walk that we do, which is not very far, plus because it's getting hot out too, so it's about a quarter mile around the Capitol, where everyone brings their signs, there's pictures of loved ones. We'll have Taliba, I don't know if I say her name right, Taliba Begay. She's a very well-known Navajo singer. She will be performing at the event as well, along with she'll be walking with myself and a couple others leading the walk. And then we'll have some entertainment by her as well. And then Palmer Sufki, I believe is his last name. He's a world-renowned flutist. So we're excited to have them come in. And then so we'll conclude the walk. And going on during this whole time around the Senate lawn, we will have booths by many various vendors, entities, Native American, Indigenous peoples, representing, multiple facets of what they do in the community, from healthcare to Indigenous prospects to, sober living stuff to healthcare. So all these different things we will be having. And then I believe after the walk, hopefully, if things go well, Governor will attend and say some words, Katie Hobbs, and Val with her partners and different things that she's got going on. Jennifer Jermaine, ex-Senator Jennifer Jermaine, will be saying a few things, and we will have a candle, well, not necessarily real candles, but like, I don't know what you
the
call
LED.
It.
Yeah, we
yeah,
have the
yeah,
same.
Yeah, there you go. Candles, yeah. right. So we'll have that lighting going on around 7-ish. Normally, we have the Capitol lighted red at the top. It's a dome. The past few years, since 2019, we've been getting it to having them turn it red, which has been awesome. So it's like so cool. But this year, apparently, some cut or something with maintenance and the lights changing, they weren't able to do it for us this year. So that's kind of a bummer, but we're going to try to make up for it by doing some creative ingenuity. We'll see how it looks on the day of. So I'll probably be tasked with that. So don't shoot the messenger. I'm trying something new.
Oh, Brandon, we have, I kind of like stole that idea and started lighting up the M in Missoula, Montana.
Oh,
and sweet. I use solar panel stakes that are, they're like Christmas lights.
And then, it shines on it?
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of what I'm doing as well. But I bought like 4 or 5 big red lights to like just shine on the Capitol.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were just talking about how there weren't very men in this movement. It's really important to, I've always loved seeing you at the events with Val, because it's always made me feel a little bit more protective. Like it's good when we see our men coming out to the events to support the women in our endeavors, and mostly like to be our protectors. And so I'm really glad you're there.
Yeah. I was literally just talking smack earlier about like, why is there more men at the event? So I'm glad that you're here now.
How do we get
I'm
more?
I'm here to redeem us.
Yes. Well, how do we get more?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I think it starts from, cause guys, we're too proud and we're shy and all these things that in one, I think it starts first with education, knowledge, because and this is what I tell my men's group I have, and I also work with youth as well, but I hope to reach them while they're younger. But my thing is, so a lot of the times in situations, you know, domestic violence or, you know, whatever scenario you want to throw in there, 80% of the time it's men doing the perpetrating, right? So we got to get out of that mindset first of all, and really start changing the way we view our women. You know, start thinking of them as your sister, your aunt, your, you know, your grandma, your mom in certain situations, and, you know, really start cherishing you all and accepting you guys for the great women that you are, leaders. You know, we follow the lead of what you guys honestly do, you know, and so having men in this field is big, like you guys mentioned. There's a few other great guys that I know really well that are along in this movement. It hasn't been easy, like to bring over some there. You know, it's not like you just, hey, let's just go do this thing and let's join the movement, right? You know, you really got to talk to them, make them understand, you know, what they're doing is for a good cause. And then they start to, especially if you come across some that have a lot of trauma or that have had experiences themselves, and maybe they've been incarcerated, they're trying to turn their life around, and this is another way to do that, you know, or coming off substance abuse, you know, domestic violence. This is when I really, you know, try to drive home these facts to them about, hey, we need to change our lives, not only for ourselves, you know, we got to help ourselves first before we can help anybody else, but, you know, your kids, you know, your wife, your spouse, your aunt, your uncle, again, start thinking of it in that manner. And now there's quite, I won't say quite a lot of us, but there are a good handful of guys that have been consistently turning out. Now they're, you know, maybe doing their lone little things here and there, but it's always great to see men out there at the forefront. And I think sometimes it's just, we're shy. We're told not to show feelings because we're, you know, we're big, strong men. And, you know, like, I'm a big dude. I'm like 6 foot, maybe like 280, right? And I'm intimidating, but they don't know that I have a softer side, you know, to me. So I'm working on that as well, too, being a little bit more softer, maybe toning my voice down a little. But, you know, just things like that. So it's great to have men in the field like you guys were talking about. So we're here. We're definitely here.
Oh, and it does give us such a like a boost of like spirit to see you all out there and see like, well, MMIW and domestic violence is not really a female problem, right? It like we are part of the partnership, but it needs to be healthy and based in respect, where violence isn't something that enters into that partnership. But another thing that I was thinking about, and Arizona has had a lot of really good luck with forming task force, and then the MMIW events, and then getting funding for different MMIW efforts and groups. Do you think having the event at the state capitol every year makes a difference? And does that get legislators involved more and aware of the issues?
Yeah, I think having somebody, you know, as passionate as Valora is about the MMIP and working with Indigenous people really goes a long way. She, you know, she has built over years of work. It's not just, it doesn't just happen overnight. You know, she's been working at this thing for years, getting with legislature, getting with our tribal community presidents and governors and all our tribal entities, and then hosting this thing at the state capitol really gives everybody that awareness. And again, we're out there with Hungwinsi Consulting. We're always at any event anybody calls, needs anything. You know, like we do have the missing persons trafficking recovery team, so we're out there looking for people. We're hand in hand, we're grassroots, we're on boots on the ground. We're working with the community, no matter where it is. You know, if it's in the city, we're in the city, we're combing blocks, we're walking through alleys. If it's on the res, we're on the res, we're at community buildings, we're at chapter houses, we're starting to, you know, help families look for their individuals by creating command center, getting volunteers in. You know, hopefully a lot of them have ATVs, horses, things like that. And we go out and train them how to do, you know, searches. And then we go out and we start looking for their loved ones. So just showing that we're there in the community, you know, getting the monies for this, since Arizona does have 22 tribes in it, that is a plus in this field because there's a lot of natives, right? So everyone's kind of starting to hear about the movement. And I'm sure everybody by now has heard about the MMIP movement. And so now there's a lot of backing for it. A lot of the senators, and I don't know if it's now because of the re-election and stuff like that, because that sometimes has a lot to do with it. They want to show they're on board. And then after a while, you kind of see people fall off. So you start knowing who's doing it for the right reasons kind of thing. But, you know, having somebody like Valora, again, I'll mention her name a lot because she's a great person. She has the drive. She has the passion. Anything associated with MMIP in Arizona, you'd probably see her name by it, or Hungwinsi Consulting with it. And she's got the push and she's got the contacts, like I said, with the state legislature, with the tribal entities, the presidents, governors, and she's got their buy-in. So she's got the trust from them. So that goes a long way in securing things.
It makes a big deal. And I feel like, you know, I totally had my assumptions blown moving from Missoula, Montana to Phoenix, Arizona, and living there for 9 years. And I thought, you know, all of the things I had heard about Arizona, Arizona's racist and all of this stuff. And well, Arizona is blowing Montana and Washington and other like majority, like large native states out of the water and how they're caring for their native people with renaming the mountain peaks and getting rid of derogatory names and creating a task force and opening up the lawn of the Senate building to, to these events, which is really, really cool. And I don't see that happening at other, I feel like our legislature in Montana is still arguing back and forth about how important the issue is. Does it deserve money? Is the perpetrator mostly Native men? Like they question, like, is it the victim type stuff?
Right. So one thing I would say really led to the effort too is Dr. Kate Fox at ASU Rowe Center. They have done so much work in the community, you know, with their MMIP. Oh my God, I forget the actual name, but they did a research on it. And they published that, and that's gone to the state level as well. And that really shown a lot of, opened up a lot of eyes to what was going on with the state. Again, that's Dr. Kate Fox, ASU School of Victimology, and the Rowe Center. They do so much research, and they're big with the MMIP movement. So it's amazing to have them on board. So you got Valora pushing for stuff with the legislature. You have the backing of a big school like ASU, and then you're getting all the knowledge, you're getting the data, you're getting the number, you're getting the tribal buy-in. I guess that's what kind of puts us ahead of other states, like you mentioned, which I didn't know about. I thought we're at the bottom still. We're like, we got to get up there somehow. We got to fight for what's right. You know, we can do our thing, but you're mentioning that we're doing a good job. And, you know, it's hats off to all these people behind the scenes that are doing the work. and everybody has bought in. I think that's what it is. It's a buy-in. Everybody understands what's going on. And it's a collective effort from multiple people.
Absolutely. So on this call, we have four different states represented. So just give a minute to announce. In Missoula, Montana, we have on May 5th, starting at 6 o'clock on the University of Montana campus on the Oval. We'll have a candlelight vigil and families speaking for MMIW and some resources. Melissa, I'll hand it over to you. Brandon, and then Emily, announce your event.
Yes, okay. We have a event that's going down just on the northwest side of Las Vegas. There's actually going to be a 5K memorial walk and run. It's a prayer run and walk, and it's at the Floyd Lamb Trail. It begins at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is Sunday, May 7th, and it's the inaugural Deborah Black Crow Memorial Prayer Run to raise awareness for domestic violence and missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And that's being put on by Fifth Sun Project and Her 38 Roses, whom will be on this podcast as well.
Awesome. Awesome. I'll go next. So this is Brandon Asadoya with Hunglency Consulting from Arizona. We will be having our Arizona State Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Awareness Day on May 5th. That will be held at the Arizona State Capitol just outside on the Senate lawn. Starting at 3 p.m., we will have workshops throughout the building. I'm discussing multiple topics from access benefits to MMI history and efforts to enhancing safety and fentanyl addiction, which is really big right now out here. At 5 p.m., we will be gathering for a walk around the Capitol, and 5:30, the walk will begin. At 6 o'clock, the evening programs and stuff will start to begin. And at 8, everything will end. But we will have food on scene, fry bread vendors, pickle slushy people. There'll be plenty of booths out there for people to view and a lot of entertainment. So come on out May 5th, Arizona State Capitol, and support everything going on with MMIP in the state of Arizona. Thank you.
In Yakima Reservation, which is South Central Washington State, is our headquarters. They'll be having a two-day symposium, the tribe is. So I'll be speaking at that on the 4th, and they'll have a march on the morning of the 5th. So those are the key events that are happening in Yakima, with symposium with different speakers, as well as a march led by the families of MMIP.
And where do we meet and what time for that, Emily?
At Legends Casino, which is in Toppenish, Washington. And there's a Eventbrite link. Our tribe is utilizing technology this year for event registration, which I'm so impressed about. Like, wow, we've reached the stage where we're using Eventbrite. Like, how is that happening? I still write a lot. I still write a lot of notes, but so the symposium is free to attend. And again, it's in Toppenish, Washington.
Thank you, everybody, for joining into this episode of Indigenous Visions MMIW Part 1 podcast. And we'll have more guests for Part 2 to talk about like some of the student-led groups and community partners that are doing work in other states. And if you have an event that you would like us to announce before May 5th, send that to the Indigenous Vision messages or email us at info@indigenousvision.org. And stay safe out there, everybody.
Thanks for checking out the Indigenous Vision podcast, part one of our MMIW special leading up to May 5th. If you have an event that you want to share, you can always tag us or send us a message on our Instagram. We are under Indigenous Vision Media. We're also on Facebook, Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit, or you can reach us by email, hello@indigenousvision.org.